Good evening, you all. I'm Kilowatt 2 Romeo India Whiskey, and my name is Dick. At this time, Mel, K2 Kilo Echo Yankee, and Dick, K2RIW, attempt to organize this usually pretty enthusiastic crew that gathers at this time to ask each other their favorite questions on their favorite subject, ham radio in general. The first hour, we discuss almost purely ham radio subjects, and we try to make a promise that most of the time, a person who signs in the beginning of the SICKNET will never have to wait more than an hour. We try to cover everybody at least lightly during that first hour. At the end of the hour, Mel goes to his mailbag for the people who are just in the process of getting their license, and we try to answer their questions because they, without that license, don't have the ability to get on the air and ask us directly. After that, Paul, WS2N, tells us what NASA's been doing. He's our space expert. And then, for the rest of the evening, we get into the deeper subjects. The deeper subjects don't please everybody. And so, be forewarned, that's going to happen. There are people who try to control what subjects are discussed on this repeater at this time. They think certain subjects are inappropriate, too scientifically probing, or too far removed from ham radio. Let me drop it. The overall philosophy of the TechNet is that there is a lot of brain power in the tri-state area of New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut that's covered by this repeater. And so there's a lot of people who will hear a subject being discussed. They've got some experience there. They chime in and give us the benefit of their wisdom. So it's a kind of a school, and we believe what we're doing is educational. And inside of a true ham radio operator, in my opinion, there's a scientist trying to get out. And that scientist is interested in anything that he doesn't understand, or he wants to understand things better, or find ways of how to combine the things that he understands. So there are times we get down to the molecular level, the atomic level, even beyond, with those questions. If that kind of material later at night on the TechNet, on the second, the third hour, so to speak, if that displeases you, then there's 800 channels on your receiver. You can tune to another one. You know what's going to happen. From time to time, you will hear people who disagree with that philosophy, and they start doing disruptive procedures. Let me drop. And people who do disruption on repeaters, it's a sign of the time. You can go to London, Chicago, Los Angeles, Dallas, no matter where you go, you'll find people doing disruptive things. There's always somebody disagreeing with what's taking place. For the most part, we ignore it, and to get mad at those people is ridiculous. It's kind of silly. If you think about what's really going on, the person who is doing the disruption, for the most part, he's hearing other people with curiosity exploring their favorite subject, and they're enjoying themselves, and he's not enjoying himself, otherwise he wouldn't be doing disruption. So we should be feeling sorry for that person as opposed to getting angry at him. For the most part, we ignore him because if you do otherwise, you're just giving the person recognition and you just go right on doing it. So, you now know a little bit of the philosophy. A person signs into the technical net by giving Mel and Dick your call letters, your name, try to remember to give me your name, and followed by the word yes, which means you do have a question or a comment for the net. We don't have to have lists of 50 people saying they're listening. This is the 29th year, going on the 29th year of the technical net. It started in 1982. So by now we believe somebody is listening. The fact that there's 128,000 people who have signed into the website amateurradio.tangovictor and listened to past recordings, that's another piece of strong evidence that somebody's listening. That doesn't have to be proven to us. So for the most part, the people who sign in are the ones who truly have a question or a comment. So give me your call letters at this time, K2RIW. Okay, that was Doug, W-A-2-S-A-Y. I heard you, Doug. And looks like the Eastern Repeater is working pretty well, and he's number one on the runway. And so, one of the other things I should have mentioned is that as we sign in, during the sign-in procedure, it's not quite as required, but once you start really asking your question before really beginning with your question asking or making comment, try to remember to listen for all four beeps at that time to reset the timing. Anyone else besides Doug to sign into the TechNet tonight, please give me your call letters and name and the word yes at this time. K2LIW.
KC2UAK. John, yes.
I'd like to make sure I got that correct, John. KC2 Uniform Hotel Alpha. Is that your call letters, John? Go ahead.
Roger that, Dick.
Okay, we got Doug and John in that order. Anyone else to sign into the TechNet with a question or a comment, please give me your call letters and name at this time.
WS2N Paul with the space report. Good evening, Dick.
Very fine, Paul. Okay, so we got a real space report tonight. All righty. Once again, Doug, John, and Paul. Anyone else, give me your call letters and name and the word yes at this time if you have a real question or a comment.
KC2WGB. After Mel, if he can. Dick.
Okay, we got John, WGB. All righty. And if we've got a light night, then we'll go into the deeper stuff a little bit earlier. Anyone else assigning? Give me your call letters and name at this time. And with the word yes, meaning you do have a question or a comment.
Good evening, all. K2KEY.
I wonder who that stranger was. Okay, Mel. Glad to hear you. You're sounding good tonight. Anyone else to check into the TechNet? Give me your call letters and name at this time. Okay, I think the UHF contest was running this weekend. Maybe there's a whole lot of tired guys out there who are involved. Start off with Doug. And Doug's about to buy a whole lot of guy wire, put up an antenna on his roof out there in the eastern end of Long Island. He normally comes into the eastern input, the 147.375. And looking forward to hearing that greater amount of ERP you're going to be putting out, Doug. And be a little bit careful where you aim that antenna. I don't want you to burn out my front end. WA2SAY, K2RIW. You got it, Doug.
Hi, Dave. W2SAY here. Okay, the question is easy. You're right. I bought the guy wire cable. I'm looking now. I have some vertical mass material and so forth, but I'm looking for some place that I can buy a 10-foot mast and a tripod that's cheaper than Radio Shack. If there's anybody around, Radio Shack is getting ridiculous prices for everything lately, and they want like $35 for a lousy 5-foot tripod or 4-foot or whatever it is. So I just wonder if anybody else that anybody knows of around in the local area is selling anything. And by the way, that whoever it was that clued me in, maybe it was you, Dick, I don't remember. To the hardware store down there by MacArthur Airport. That's quite something. That's Long Island Hardware is the name of it on Bend Highway, and that's a really fantastic hardware store. So with all of that, back to net. WA2SAY.
Yes, I have a comment. K2KEY.
Okay, and Mel is going to have some further comments. Doug, you've got a beautiful, nice, quiet carrier into that repeater. You're coming through the machine extremely well. I've listened to you both on 147.375 as well as on 146.85. In both cases, your audio is good and clean, but low. You're about 8 decibels lower than you should be, in my opinion. So anything you do to increase the deviation or shout into the mic a little bit louder would be helpful. Doug is looking for 10 foot of mast and the tripod, the TP mount that's going to go on top of his tower. As he said, he found Long Island Hardware on Veterans Highway, just west of, on the south side of Veterans Highway, just west of MacArthur Airport. And just like I discovered, my goodness, do they have a nice hardware section when it comes to real chunks of galvanized steel, turnbuckles and eye bolts and thimbles and guide clips. And he says he bought his guy wire. When it comes back to him, I'm going to ask him, is that where he bought the guy wire and what kind did he buy? But Mel's going to have some comments. Mel, he's a guy who's been doing some serious guying under adverse conditions because where he lives in the Manhattan Beach section of Brooklyn, he's about 2 blocks, or maybe 1.5 blocks, right from the seashore. So he gets salt spray, and if there's anything going to rust, Boy, can he do a life test in his backyard. Salt Spray life test. K2KEY, K2RIW. Go ahead, Mel.
Much closer to the ocean than that, 350 feet from the ocean. No, not the point of the guy wire. The point is of these tripods. A friend of mine bought one of those tripods, and it didn't last long, because when I saw the failure when he took it down, and, because now he's decided he's going to modify it and everything like that. What is, a lot of these tripods, you got to be sure that they're not riveted together. In other words, they got a plate up on the top where normally the rotor sits or whatever bearing you want to put up there. And that plate is riveted to like an angle plate, or it's bent on an angle plate. And then the pipes that go down that support that are riveted to that plate. And then there's another plate sometimes they'll put a, you know, halfway down depending on the size of the tripod. They have another plate that you can mount a rotor there and then put a bearing up on top, but everything is riveted. And the rivets just rip out. They're not meant really for a beam. They're meant for a light weight of a TV antenna maybe. Be very, very cautious because they just come apart. You gotta get a quality. If you're gonna use that type of system, tripod, you gotta get a really quality one and look at its construction, Dick, over.
Your rig and audio is sounding real good tonight, Mel. I wonder if you just happen, and your point is well taken. So these inexpensive, constructed, fast-made TP mounts that have rivets look like they're very troublesome for anything more a couple of years of service. Do you happen to know of a brand name or one that's better? I vaguely remember seeing devices like that in the Rhone catalog, Rhone Tower catalog. And the biggest problem is going to be where do you find a local dealer for Rhone? And my guess is their prices, their equipment is a little bit pricey, but they do build some good stuff. I don't know if the Graybar company, which used to have a local a place on Route 110, just off Route 110 on the west side, the Graybar company used to sell some very nice hardware, motors for, you know, industrial-grade motors for blowing air around buildings and oil burner parts and whatever. And they also sold some very good tower equipment. I don't know if there's still a local rep. So got a suggestion as to what brand name and where you could buy it. Does it have to be by a website, Mel? K2KEY, K2RIW.
Right, the Rhone does make a very good piece of equipment and all. I don't know if they have, I don't know if any local distributors anymore. I don't remember Graybar having any of that type of mount. Pan Nod, I don't remember it. I remember Graybar, of course, dealt with them quite a bit in the past, our company, and we bought a lot of commercialized electrical equipment and things. But don't remember ever seeing that coming through their catalog at the time or whatever. So as far as suggesting, you know, maybe, just maybe, there is one company you can look online because they specialize in amateur radio products, is Texas Towers. I know they sell towers of all types, so possibility that maybe that's the best lead-in I could give you right now is Texas Towers, Dick, over.
Yeah, that's a good one. I know those guys at Texas Towers, good straight ham radio operators, members of the Central States VHF Society. I've met them at those meetings in the past. So most likely they've got it. Shipping from Texas could be a little bit pricey. If we can find something a little bit more local, it would be helpful. The Graybar Company sells a lot of the hardware that you see being used by linemen. When LIPA, LOCO, Con Ed, and whatever are installing this really stoochy stuff for guying and earth screw anchors and guy guards and the stuff that gets screwed into telephone poles and the hardware that goes on top of the telephone poles, the insulators and the wire holders and all this kind of jazz and the splices, Graybar has all of that hardware. Whether or not your Con Ed and LIPA are really buying it from Graybar, I don't know, but Graybar had it at one time. I've got the Graybar catalog. It's about 2 inches thick. The one I've got is probably 15 years old. And as I said, there used to be a nice distribution center of theirs on Route 110 on the west side. Don't know if it's still there. I don't remember visiting them in the last 10 years. Anyone else that can be helpful to Doug, because you know of where he can buy a teepee mount, a tripod-like thing for the top of it, of the peak of the roof of his house, and or where he can find 10 foot of aluminum mast. I'm trying to remember now. Yeah, Reynolds, let me drop. The Reynolds Aluminum Company, I believe it was Reynolds, had a warehouse that was on Grand Boulevard. Yes, it was on Grand Boulevard, just west, correction, just east of Deer Park Avenue, and one block off of Grand Boulevard, Industrial Road or something like that. In other words, it was almost within line of sight of the AIL Deer Park building. The Reynolds, I think it was Reynolds or maybe one of the other aluminum companies. Okay, Davidson Aluminum, he's right. So Davidson Aluminum, but they're still there. And if you talk to them just nicely and they allow you to go into their back room, you will see thousands and thousands of pieces of aluminum tubing, 12 feet long, 24 feet long, every diameter, every wall thickness you can think of. Many of them are 60, 61T6 grade. You walk in there, it's aluminum heaven. You go in there and say, oh, I'd love to have one of those. And you pick up a pair of them and make sure that they telescope together just right, if there's any tolerances between them. So I remember going into that Reynolds company and buying aluminum from them in the past. In fact, the main piece of mast on top of my tower right now came from there. So a little bit pricey, but brand new, very good condition stuff. The guys in New Jersey, in southern New Jersey, have got a beautiful aluminum scrap yard they can go to where they pay about half the price of brand new, and they get rather good quality. Anyone else with any other suggestions for Doug on where he can get the tripod or the aluminum tubing? If you want to give us your suggestion, give me your call letters right now. K2RIW in the TechNet.
N2YJC.
N2YJC. Boy, I should know you. Tell me your call, your name one more time, sir, and go right ahead with your information.
Hey, okay, Dick. Name is Lou. I believe there's still a gray bar in Hop Hog, right off the expressway, it's either at the Motor Parkway exit or the Route 111 exit on the south side of the expressway.
Okay, YYY. YYY recognized. So, south side of the expressway in Hop Hog. Alrighty, that's a good place to know. And better hear Gray Bar is still there. And Joe, RYY, where do you buy your Sirius hardware? You got it, Joe.
No, I wanted to just ask you a question. I was just lightly listening. What is the guy looking for? Is he looking for a tripod to put on his roof to support something?
I can tell you tuned in a little bit late. Yeah, Doug, W-A-2-S-A-Y, wants to put a tripod on the roof, wants to put 10-foot of mast coming out of it. He's going to be guying it with something like a 6M quarter-inch extremely high-strength steel guy wire with all the right thimbles and screw anchors and, or screw eyes and guy clips. He's bought the. He went to this beautiful hardware store on Betts Highway called Long Island Hardware, and some of the stuff he's already bought. And Mel was telling us that there's an inexpensively made tripod that you can put on the roof of your house, which is held together with rivets. And Mel has seen those rivets come apart in a small number of years. So he's looking for a better quality tripod and the tubing, the 10-inch tubing. And my guess is he's going to use inch and a half, inch and three-quarter, or two-inch diameter tubing. And my guess is he's going to use something close to eighth-inch wall thickness or a little bit thicker. When you study aluminum tubing, you discover that the strength of the tubing, as far as bending strength is concerned, goes up as a function of either diameter squared or diameter cubed. It becomes stronger and stronger. I keep forgetting which way it is. If you had the choice of using less aluminum because of thinner wall thickness but larger diameter, you come out ahead. The next question is, should you push that to the limit and use a 6-inch diameter tubing that's a 32nd of an inch thick? Of course not. But still, if you're comparing inch and a half versus 2-inch, as long as your U-bolts are big enough and your rotator can take it, I'm a big fan of 8-inch wall, 2-inch diameter tubing, 60-61 T6. You buy a piece of that, a little bit pricey, but it'll be there 20 years from now. Anybody with any further suggestions for Doug, give me a call. That is right now, K2RIW.
Yeah, WGB. Mention something if you give me 2 seconds to talk.
Okay, we're going to go to Joe and John in that order. Go ahead, Joe.
Okay, I have a 10-foot Roan galvanized tripod. Brand new, never been on the roof, never used. Bought it several years ago, and I can't use it at my particular location. So if you're looking for something like that, I have it.
Whoa, that's a beauty. Either I or Doug is going to buy that from you. We're going to pass it over to Doug in 2 minutes for him to find out if he wants to buy that from you. And I've gotten some stuff from Joe in the past, Doug, and the price quite often is awfully good. John, KC2WGB, go right ahead with your suggestion.
I think I was just going to suggest that Glenn Martin might be a way to go, but something from Joe would probably be a better deal.
I should know, but I don't. Where's the nearest Glenn Martin outlet? Do they have a website? I've heard the name, but I don't know very much about them. Give me a few words on that one, John.
Comment on that one, too, because I own one.
Right, their website, as far as I know, I don't know the local distributor. Anything I've done with them, I've done on the web. So pick it up. He knows more.
You got it, Joe.
Yeah. You want to pay? You're going to pay a lot of money. That's an aluminum structure, four-legged, and it'll go like on 32 inch between legs. Like it'll catch like typically two beams in a roof. That's why I couldn't use the tripod I have, because that's 48 inch between the long legs, the two outside legs, and it wouldn't catch like, you know, two beams. Glenn Martin is typically, I think I've been paid about either 260 or 280 for a 10-foot Glenn Martin tower, and that does not come with the bracket on top to be able to hold the pipe into the thing, especially if you're going to put a rotor on top of it. Doesn't come with that.
Okay, you've got the right one. Comes with all that. My favorite kind of construction material is aluminum when it comes to mast and booms of antennas, 6061 T6 aluminum. But when it comes to the tower itself, I love galvanized steel. Aluminum towers have been awfully troublesome. Each of the guys I know who have put up an aluminum tower, they ran into some kind of trouble in some relatively short period of time, like 8 years or so. It came down, came apart, whatever. Fatigued. Galvanized steel, properly treated, is really the right way to go. I didn't hear, you got 48 inch leg spacing, and Doug is a crafty enough guy. If he's got to lay a piece of a 2x8 on top of his roof in order to bridge the gap between his rafters and to pick them up and properly weatherproof it, I did that on my roof once. I know he's willing to do that. So the 48 inches, I'm guessing, is not going to give Doug much of a problem. Your tower, is it steel or aluminum, Joe? The B2RYY, K2RIW?
It is a 10-foot galvanized steel tower made by Roan.
Whoa. I'm drooling. Okay. Hey, Doug, we found a deal for you. W-A-2-S-A-Y, K2RIW.
Okay, Dick, that's to be perfectly honest, that sounds like a little bit more than I bargained for. I know how to mount it. What you really have to do is not you put a big steel board on the outside of the roof. What you do is you go right through the roof and put a great big sheet of like 3/4 inch plywood or something. And maybe a gigantic piece of steel or something like that as a washer, and then you put your bolts right through that, and then it doesn't go anywhere. That's what you really have to do. And then it's not exposed to the rain and everything else all the time in the sun. But I think that's a little bit more tripod than I'm really looking for. I guess I'm going to have to bite the bullet and go to Lafayette. I looked up Don Davidson, by the way. Let me drop it for a second.
Yeah, anything you can do to increase your audio, Mel, Doug, would be helpful. Now I listen more carefully. You're about 10 decibels low on audio. Go ahead, Doug.
Well, there's nothing I can do conveniently right this minute. I have to take the top off the radio and turn it apart. And I thought I did that some time ago, so maybe there's something dying in there. I really don't know. Anyway, if you can still hear me, I looked up Davidson on the internet while we were talking, and the last thing that was on the internet, it was dated 1999, and apparently they laid off most of their employees, fired all the union people, and there were a batch of people looking for their final pay. So I would assume that they are completely out of business by this time. I also looked up Graybar, and I did not find the Hopog location. The only locations I found were Teterboro, New Jersey, and Long Island City. So that's where that stands. Anyway, thanks to all who have, and by the way, I'm probably going to use a steel mast, a regular TV steel mast, I think, with the guy wire, which is, 5/32, I guess. I figure that should hold the things up. Let me stop in a second. Okay, got the beep. Let me see, was there anything else I wanted to add? I couldn't get thimbles at the hardware store. They had larger ones, but they didn't have anything for that 5/32 cable. They had stuff for like 1/4-inch cable, which was really too large. And I also checked an Ace Hardware store up in Wading River. They didn't have anything either, and I stopped. No, I haven't actually stopped yet. I was going to stop at Lowe's, but I didn't get a chance. Anyway, I think that's about it. I'll turn it back over to Ned. Thanks to everybody, and WA2SAY will be listening. Go ahead, Dick.
And to YJC once more.
Lou recognized, and we'll be passing it to you in a second, Lou. I got three pieces of good news for you, Doug. Number one, when you shouted into the mic, your audio came up a lot, and it's a lot easier to listen to. But yes, you do have to turn that pot eventually. It didn't come all the way. Number two, you think that Joe's piece of roan teepee is more than you need. I don't think you should look at it that way. I guarantee Joe has got a fairly nice price for it, at least the Joe that I've dealt with has, and the fact that it's a little stoochier than you think you need, that's the lesser of two evils. Another piece of information for you is that the thimbles made for larger cable, like 1/4-inch cable, don't worry about it. The fact that the thimble is there, even though you've got 5/32 for your guy wire, the main purpose with the thimble is to give the wire, as it bends, the 180-degree bend around the screw eye or around the eye bolt, to give it a nice radius of that bend so that you're not overstressing the guy wire. The thimble that's made for 1/4-inch guy wire does that. The guy wire sitting down in that great big notch is not going to be hurt by that. The thimble doesn't have to match. When it comes to the guy clips, that's another issue. Can you use 1/4-inch guy clips on 5/32 guy wire? There, I'm not so sure of. Try to buy the right size guy clips, because there you're trying to make intimate contact all the way around the guy wire so that the U-shaped object grabs it correctly and pushes it into the saddle and you get the full strength of that guy clip. So there, try to use the right size. But on the thimble, use any thimble that's larger. Not to worry. That's the right way to go. Let's see what Lou's got to say. N2YJC, K2LIW. Go ahead, Lou.
Very good. Doug, if you're looking for quality galvanized pipe, very easy or usually reasonably priced source for that is most fence, chain link fence companies on the island. You can get all different kinds of diameters, wall thicknesses. They even had something that was, they called it hardened, and I'm not really too sure if it was hardened or maybe they were talking about weather hardened. But I was very successful in building a 50-foot tower using a bunch of fence pipe, and little bit of welding and what have you. The other thing is the thimbles, if all else fails, they are available at Home Depot. I bought them there myself, and they were the good ones that were galvanized. They had a variety of sizes, and like Dick says, I worry about the thimble being a couple of sizes too big. And lastly, I agree 1,000% with Dick on the 10-foot tripod. I would much rather use a 10-foot tripod and then maybe shorten the mast a little bit than a 3-foot tripod with a 10-foot mast. Or I'll go with the 10-foot tripod and a 10-foot and you'll gain a little bit of altitude. That was my rig timing out. Back to net, N2Y, JC.
Very fine, Lou. Darn good information. Lou, your audio is a little bit heavy. We're going through the extremes here tonight. Lou's 2 dB too strong, and Mel and Doug is quite a few dB too weak. My strongest recommendation, Doug, before you commit to a tripod, just go and visit Joe and look at it and drool. And just find out how well you like it, what it looks like, and what it's going to cost you. I recommend you at least look at it as an option, even though ahead of time you think it's not quite what you're looking for. Because I think he's got a quality piece of hardware there that you should at least look at. Other than that, good luck with this project, Doug, and it sounds like you're proceeding very nicely. I'm not an enthusiast of steel pipe. Steel pipe is extremely strong, a little bit on the heavy side. And when the galvanizing does wear away, it's a little bit troublesome. Not many of the pipes you can buy are really hot-tip galvanized. Some of them are only electroplated with zinc, and it wears away a little bit fast. So buying the right pipe, and maybe the fence people have already solved that problem, so maybe I'm worrying unnecessarily. But when it comes to hauling that pipe up the roof and plugging it into the top of the tower, the aluminum pipe, which is going to be one-third the number of pounds and foot-pounds of bending moment on your hands when you're putting it in, so to speak, is a lot easier to deal with, in my opinion. But that's just me. Alrighty, back to you, Doug, for any other questions or comments. Of A2SAY, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Okay, here's WA2SAY. Okay, look, I'll take a look at what Joe's got there. I'm a little bit concerned about getting this thing up to the roof and the logistics of mounting it. You know, I know how to do it, theoretically. I've never actually done that, you know, with plates on the inside of the roof, but I know the theory anyway. You know, I don't want to make this a four-man project if I can avoid it. It's going to be a two-man project anyway, but maybe not any more than that. Anyway, I will do that. Joe, I need at least your call letters and perhaps your phone number or your email address or something. This is somebody like... All right, Joe, why don't you pick it up and answer the questions for me? Thank you.
Okay, I expected Joe to pick that up. He's being super polite. By the way, when it comes to putting 2x6s or something like that, bridging the gap between your two rafters in the roof, and then putting a bolt through the middle of that, through, and then maybe there's a similar 2x6, a smaller piece, on the outside of the roof where the leg is not pressing directly on the roof, it's pressing on this piece of 2x6 on the outside, and there's a bolt going through there to the inside, bridging the two rafters, and therefore you're making a sandwich that makes it an extremely strong structure. Also, even though you think that Joe's tripod is too big, too heavy, and too hard to lift, when you buy the right piece of hardware and you're about to have a tower raising party and you tell your hams on this repeater that you might need some muscle power to do it, that should not be a gating item, Doug. There's people out there who will volunteer. I'm one of them. So don't let that be a gating item. Joe, looks like we've got him drooling. He wants to see your tripod. What's the easiest way he can contact you, Joe? Snail mail, internet email, WA2RYY, WA2 Romeo Yankee to take it, K2RAW. Go ahead, Joe.
Very simple. Give me your phone number and I'll call you on the phone. I'll tell you everything you need to know. I'm going to pass my information over the radio.
Makes some sense. Doug, are you willing to issue your phone number? And if not, give him an email address. W-A-2-S-A-Y, K-2-R-A-W in the group.
I normally would give the phone number, but if Joe thinks that's risky, then maybe I shouldn't. So my email address is D. McGarrett, spelled the same way as I am in QRS. D. McGarrett at optonline.net, which everybody is on, I guess, on Long Island that has cable. D. McGarrett at optonline.net will get to me. And that should answer that question. So anyway, assuming you have internet connection there, I guess every ham probably does. W-A-2-S-A-Y, back to net.
Very good. And again, I'm glad you're shouting into the mic. Sounds good. Joe, I'd love to give you your email address, Joe. It's your choice. It looks like, other than that, you'll be talking to Doug, and you'll find his email address. He says it's issued. It's already on the QRZ.com. W-H-U-R-Y-Y, K-2-R-I-W.
I'll send him an email with my contact information. W-H-U-R-Y-Y.
Very fine, Joe. Thanks an awful lot, Joe, for volunteering. And Doug, keep letting us know as that project is going along. I'm hearing the sound of a lot of progress, and there's going to be some more RF hitting the ether out there in your town. I should know your town. I think it's... Why can't I think of the name of your town? Doug, tell me the name of your town.
Rocky Point. Beautiful Rocky Point.
Yep. My family came very close to buying a house in Rocky Point, and you're just a stone throw away from the RCA laboratory out there in Rocky Point. So, all right, the next person on the list was John, KC2 Uniform Hotel Alpha. What would you like to discuss tonight, John? K2RIW in the TechNet.
K2RIW, good evening, Dick. Good evening to all on the net. This is KC2 UHA, and my question is about interdigital filters. Now, I like to make physical things, and I ran across something. What I'd like to do is try building one, perhaps in the 70-centimeter band. Let me drop it. Now, my problem is this. I don't have a lot of equipment. I don't have spectrum analyzers. I don't have vector and network analyzers. But I ran across something on doing a search for information, a method of tuning a filter called the Dischel method, named after a guy, I guess, in the 50s, that only requires a signal generator and a spotted line. Do you think that's doable for the average, you know, amateur radio operator? Back to you, Dick.
Now, you've opened up a beautiful subject here, John. For those who don't know what an interdigital filter is, picture teeth of a comb, and one of the kinds of design, all the teeth aim in one direction. Another kind of design, you've got teeth of a comb aimed from the left, teeth of a comb aimed from the right, and they're interstitially, the teeth are in between each other. But those kind of resonators, each of them are approximately a quarter wavelength long, at 70 centimeters, I guess that's in the vicinity of 6 or so inches, I think it is. Anyhow, the two methods of construction for an interdigital filter are either strip line, where you use the right kind of printed circuit board, and on one printed circuit board you have these fingers, another layer of printed circuit board goes on top and on bottom to act as a shield, and the whole thing is screwed together. So there are strip line type interdigital filters. The other kind of interdigital filter is really built with a round rod inside of a metal cage, so to speak. So you start off with this metal box, and the rods are screwed down to one of the walls of the box. When you get the right design, let me drop. When you get the right design, All you've got to do is duplicate the dimensions, John. You'd be very happy to find out that you build it correctly. In other words, if the design you're looking at is a 70-centimeter design by a good hand, and I can think of some right away, W1 Gigahertz, Whiskey 1 Golf Hotel Zulu, Gigahertz, those, Paul Wade, he's got an online textbook that I guarantee has got the interdigital filters, and I can find a few other references for you, where he gives you the dimensions, you duplicate those dimensions, you almost don't have to do any tuning. It'll fly right off the bat. When it comes to the Dishall method of tuning, I have done that. I've gone through the procedure of the Dishall method, a little bit more complicated than first meets the eye, and that's for really aligning everything about the filter. In other words, if you're not sure about the right resonant length and tuning for each of the individual rods, each individual element of the filter, and if you're not sure of the right coupling coefficient between those rods so you get the right overall bandwidth and insertion loss, the Dishall probe procedure, it's a many-step procedure, which doesn't require a spectrum analyzer, yes, it would allow you to do that alignment. But you don't have to go through all of that rigmarole, in my opinion. You choose the right design and build it accurately with your calipers and your ruler, and you will get 98% of the performance right out of the box, so to speak. W2CQH, Whiskey 2 Charlie Quebec Hotel. Whiskey 2 Charlie Quebec Hotel. Dr. Reed Fisher had a series of articles about an interdigital filter for the 432 megacycle band in QST magazine, roughly 1971, plus or minus a couple of years. You do an archival search at ARRL headquarters.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
You do an archival search at ARRL, if you're an ARRL member, or find somebody who is, and you search W2CQH, interdigital filter, and 432, the right combination. The thing that's a little bit disappointing to me is that when you use the past article archives on the ARRL site, it is a little bit persnickety. There are times where I know the exact name of the article, the exact month and year, and I go to that archive and it says, that record doesn't exist. 50% of the time, it tells you the record doesn't exist, even though you posed the question exactly right. So that's the way their website used to be. I hope they've repaired that since my last encounter I had with that a few months ago. But they've got the data. Whiskey 1 Gigahertz, if you find the online website for the online booklet, I guarantee he's got some good filters in his online book. And even if you can't find that particular website, if you go to, oh my goodness, I've forgotten the call letters of WA1MBA, Whiskey Alpha 1 Mike Bravo Alpha. You go to the website of Whiskey 1 MikeBravoAlpha.org, and you look down all of his references, you will find not only the Gigahertz online book, but I guarantee you're going to eventually find somebody's design, whether you decide to build it in strip line or build it with real physical rods in a box. You find somebody's design, you copy that design, and it will fly right off the bat. That's the easiest way, in my opinion, John. KC2, Uniform Hotel Alpha, for any fills, K2RIW in the TechNet.
KC2, UHA, KC2, K2RIW, sorry, Dick. I wrote your name down and your call sign, and then I forgot where I put it. All right, that information is great. I've been writing things along. One other thing, if I want to, let's say, check the shape of a filter. Now, the only thing that comes close to a instrument that I could use is I got a signal hound. Can I use that, which is a USB, I can't think of it. All right, that's a, the other instrument, not the analyzer. All right, I got a memory loss. Sorry about that. Can I use that along with a noise source Just a noise source that's been amplified, running through the filter, and I should be able to get a shape on the spectrum analyzer. Sorry. Would that be possible? Back to you.
When it comes to measuring the insertion loss of the filter, the shape of the filter, the bandwidth, and what is the 3 dB bandwidth, the 6 dB bandwidth, the 10 dB bandwidth, the 20 dB bandwidth, there's lots and lots of ways of doing it. A swept signal generator into a spectrum analyzer, you know that. A vector network analyzer, you know that. Just a simple power meter with a source of signal where you can make the source of signal reasonably constant in amplitude and reasonably accurate in frequency. If you've got a 432 transmitter that happens to scan the 430 to 450 megacycles, and if you can put it through a 10 dB pad, run it at the 1 watt level into your filter and into a power meter, and then move the frequency in 10 kilohertz steps, write down the numbers as to what signal strength you got. Unfortunately, now you've got to calibrate the amplitude of the signal of the receiver. That's a little bit of a problem. Into a power meter, into a crystal detector, into anything that can detect power as you sweep the frequency, and you write down the numbers and then hand draw the graph. Worst comes to worst, that's the way I did it when we first cut our teeth in engineering way back in the late 60s. A crystal detector into an oscilloscope with a scanning signal generator is a way of doing it, a sweep signal generator. So point by point, measuring the insertion loss of the filter at known frequencies will allow you to draw the shape, but you almost don't have to do that. It's a good academic, let me drop. It's a good academic exercise. It'll give you a warm, fuzzy feeling. It'll give you some confidence, and it's nice to make the measurement if you enjoy doing that. But if you start off with somebody's known good design, these no-tune filters, these no-tune translators, what am I looking for now? Transceiver. A tunable IF transverter. There's the word. Transverter, tunable IF transverter, 432 megacycles, no-tune transverter. I can't remember the call letters of the guy on the West Coast who lives in Oregon, who wrote a whole series of articles on no-tune transverters. He has some beautiful interdigital filters built into those. And the nice thing about an interdigital filter is that although his particular interdigital filter maybe is there to clean up the local oscillator for a 1296 or a 432 converter. Let me drop. Starting off with a known good design on a known good frequency, you can scale it. Very similar to a, assume you find somebody's really beautiful design for a Yagi at 915 megacycles, for 902 meg M-band, but you want a 432 version of it. And if you just simply scale every single dimension proportional to the wavelength of 902 versus 432, you will come up with the exact same antenna with the exact same gain, beamwidth and everything else, standing wave ratio and whatever. And with a slight bit of variation when it comes to interdigital filters, you find an interdigital filter that's made to clean up a local oscillator at 1152 megahertz for a 1296 transverter, and you just simply scale all those dimensions as a function of frequency to build that exact same filter at 432, you will have 98% accuracy, if you know what I mean. So just finding a good design with a known swept bandwidth, and if you start Googling interdigital filters, an interdigital filter plus strip line, if that's the way you want to build it, interdigital filter plus microstrip, interdigital filter plus a round rod design, so to speak, I guarantee you're going to find a number of articles of a known good design, and just simply make a Chinese copy is my recommendation. But lots and lots of ways of finding out ahead of, after you build it, what is the real bandwidth and what is the real insertion loss and how much ripple it has, and can you tune it for a little bit less ripple. You shouldn't have to do that if you start off with a good design. Please come back in the future weeks, John, and tell us what you find on this one. And I may do a little bit of searching myself to find you some good interdigital filter design. KC2, Uniform Hotel Alpha. K2 Romeo India Whiskey. My name is Dick. You got it, Sean.
All right, thank you for that information, Dick. K2RIW, KC2UHA. That's very good information, and actually it's encouragement, because, I'm not interested in strip line, because I don't want to work small and stuff like that, but I do like to work physical. So, you know, the rods in a box, especially at 70 centimeters, it comes out quite substantial, made out of, you know, aluminum and stuff like that. I don't know if I can, it probably won't weld. I don't have any experience in that area, but for screws, 432s, I can, you know, tap and drill and tap and make that tighter than a drum. So, thank you for the encouragement. And also, I'd like to thank you. In the past, you turned me on to a Polarplexer. I found out some information. It's a fantastic gadget. And you're right. All the microwave guys are in California. So, with that, back to the net. KC2UHA.
Yeah, for quite a number of years, I was a member of the San Bernardino Microwave Society in San Bernardino, California. Real good group of guys. To my knowledge, they were the major developers and deployers of Polarplexer 10 gigahertz and 5 gigahertz and 3 gigahertz transceivers, wideband style. So lots of those guys, if you Google the right combination, Chuck Sweblem, S-W-E-B-L-E-M, K6, I'm having trouble thinking of Chuck's call letters. He's in my my lookup file. I'm going to have to find that. He did a lot of that work. And so Polarplexers, and that should have a number of websites that will give you information. Don't reject the idea of a strip line or microstrip, because when you're building it at a frequency as low as 432, and those are very relative words, in strip line, the individual resonators in strip line are going to be something like 4 inches long with something like half an inch of spacing between them. This is not the watchmaker's work here, John. You could, with enthusiasm, with an ink pen, lay out the design on a piece of double-sided printed circuit board. Let me drop. When you're building something where the individual resonators in strip line are something like 4 inches long, and there's something like a half inch of spacing between them, and you're going to build about 3, 4, 5, or 6 of them, something that big, you can lay it out with a felt tip pen with your ruler. You can then take your X-Acto knife and cut through the copper, and then you hold your soldering iron against the copper in the places where you want to remove it and peel it away. So by very simple physical techniques, you can build a strip line version. It doesn't require for the big thing that you're building, it doesn't require, you know, photo etching and precision and fancy chemicals and all that. You can build it by purely physical techniques in strip line if you desire to do it. So what you're building is a rather big object. So you've got lots of choices here. And if I know you, John, you're going to build one with rods and you're going to build one with strip line later on and say, gee, I don't know which one I like. They both have advantages. One is nice and compact in altitude, and the other one is nice and stoochy with these 432 screws that were carefully tapped and to put all those rods together. So you've got lots of choices, and hopefully you'll find some of these good articles on this. Back to you for any finals on this one, John. KC2UHA, K2RIW in the TechNet.
All right, very good,
Nick. K2RIW, KC2UHA. That's great encouragement. I'm going to hold off on the strip line or microstrip for later on. But first, since I enjoy doing mechanical things, and since I have, a couple of small machines that can do metal work, they'll handle something like a 70 centimeter filter. which, you know, even if I make it up to 10 pole, there'll only be about maybe 30-something inches. So I can probably handle that, especially if I work a piece at a time. But what I'd like to do is try something small. Yes, I have found programs and a lot of information, and I'm putting it all together. It's just I wasn't sure whether, let me drop it.
Yeah, before you go on, stand by a second here, John. Doug has built lots of strip line filters, and I think he's about to make a suggestion for you. W-A-2-S-A-Y, go right ahead, Doug.
This is W-A-2-S-A-Y. Okay, a couple of comments. I am looking at this very minute at a circuit board. Looks like it's made on FR4 or perhaps G10. With filters for a local oscillator on 432, or I guess the oscillator would be a 390-something, whatever. Let me see. I got a telephone call coming in, but I got an answering machine, too, so that'll handle it. Anyway, couple of things. Let me drop it a second. Okay. First place, this U-shaped resonators. The U-shaped resonator, each piece of the U is 4 inches long, so the total length of the resonator is 8 inches. Now, this particular one has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 resonators, with what looks like an amplifier in between the third and the fourth one. So that's a clue as to what they have to look like. The spacing here, let me see. The coupled spacing, let me see what the coupled spacing is. My measuring stick is giving me trouble. Hang on a second. Okay, my measuring stick is now functioning, and it looks like the spacing is just a skosh less than a 16th of an inch. That's what it looks like here, between the coupled sections. So that's an idea. Now, the other thing, I guess I wanted to mention a couple of things here. Let me see if I got it still.
Yeah, tell us.
A couple of things I want to mention. This is fine if you just want to clean up a local oscillator and get your step recovery diode or whatever it is to put it out on the frequency you want. This kind of micro filter is fine. If you want a real filter, you really have to use either strip line or the hardware construction that you mentioned, Dick, with the rods inside a box. Because in microstrip, unfortunately, you get coupling through space from the input to the output, and the ultimate rejection is pretty punk. You get maybe 25 dB ultimate rejection, and that's about all, no matter how many sections you have, unless you shield the heck out of it, and that's not really worth the trouble. The way to do it is in strip line. and of course, strip line is a little bit more difficult to work with, but that's if you wanted something physically smaller, and a decent filter, a really good one that will have an ultimate attenuation down in the 90s or whatever. That's the way you have to go. Let me drop it a second.
Doug, you didn't tell us the source. You were looking at this beautiful picture of the U-shaped resonator type filter. Is this a website or what are you looking at? You didn't tell us how John can find it. You got it, Doug.
I have the thing in my hand here. It's a piece of one of the ham band transverters. 2 meters in, 432 or 440 or something out. I unfortunately lost one piece of this. It came in three circuit boards. I only have two of them. When I moved out here from Queens, I apparently lost a piece and I never got a chance to put it together. The rest of it is put together, but I don't have the third piece. I have the part with the local oscillator on it, and I have one other part, which I think is the RF amplifier, the RF preamp, and the mixer, but there's a third part. I don't know what it is exactly offhand, but I don't have it. Anyway, that's what I'm looking at. So that's where we are. And by the way, this was not tuned at all. This was a no-tuned design.